It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Now it's time for another Guy Benson Show, Benson Bite, where we bring you the day's most interesting interviews in a bite-sized package. For the full episode, visit GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And with us now is Chip Roy, congressman from the great state of Texas, the 21st Congressional District. And it's good to have you back here.
Guy, great to be on. I hope you are doing well.
Likewise. All right, so let's talk a bit about what happened over the weekend. I know that you ended up voting a way that I would not have voted. I would have voted the other way. But I also understand a number of the points that you have made and your frustrations around the foreign aid dollars going out with the border remaining unresolved. We'll get to the border. It's getting worse again. Just sort of lay out what your argument was as you explained your opposition to what Republican and Democratic leadership, frankly, came together to pass.
Yeah, Guy, well, first of all, thank you, and I appreciate being on your show because you do exactly this. Like, even when we disagree, which actually you and I rarely do, but on occasion we do. And on this one, we disagree, and I appreciate you having me on to explain it. And, like, the short version is this. At the end of the day, the short version, nothing else, for me as a Texan, and you said we'll get to it in a minute on the border, the speaker over the last 5 months has been very clear that we should not advance funding for Ukraine or advance foreign aid generally without securing the border of the United States. He very much tied it to Ukraine. Whether you agree with that or not, he said it for about 5 straight months. And the American people are frustrated that we never do what we say we will do. But if you back up a step further, I'm 51 years old. I came of age during Reagan. I am predisposed to want to have a strong military and peace through strength. I am predisposed as an American, as a Christian, as somebody who believes in Israel's right to exist, to want to stand shoulder to shoulder with Israel. We spend $3.8 billion every year in our defense budget to support Israel. I'm predisposed to want to do that. But the bill that we had on the floor this weekend was pre-designed as a package to be attached to a Senate bill to achieve the desired outcome that Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden, and Mike Johnson, they agreed in that sort of way they agree in a four corners fashion to pass legislation that would be not really amended or debated on the floor. And the result would be $95 billion unpaid for, which would include funding, for example, in Israel, $9 billion to humanitarian aid, some X number of billion of which will end up in the hands of Hamas through NGOs and other paths. I couldn't support that. I couldn't support moving down the road for additional money unpaid for Ukraine while our borders are wide open. And we don't have a clear mission. And frankly, we've been sending now, we're now at up to $175 billion that I've either already sent or will send to Ukraine without a clear mission or without Zelensky being clear about what he's willing to sit at the table and do. And we're funding endless wars. And one final point, sorry for the filibuster. We are now 25 years in to what I will call the ghost budget of wars. We have been funding wars in the Middle East, now funding war here in Ukraine and everything else, and we never pay for it. We've spent about now $8.5 trillion, give or take, not even counting all of the money we've now spent on burn pits, because we continue to fund wars without then having a debate here at home about what to do about it. I want one Republican to have the nerve to stand up and say, you know what, I believe in war so much, I'm going to vote for a 50% marginal tax rate on people who make over $1 million to pay for it. Then I want to see how many of the donor class and how much the Wall Street Journal editorializes in favor of war.
Okay, and I think a lot of your colleagues, and I assume you like and respect quite a few of your Republican colleagues specifically who voted in favor of these packages, and we have those folks on the show as well, and they gave their explanations for why, and I'm generally persuaded by that side of it, which is why I would have voted with them. But I understand all the points that you're making. I don't think that they're illegitimate concerns to raise. I think it's perfectly within the America First patriotic paradigm to say, hey, if we've got a country fighting the Russians with their own boots on the ground, I want to help them. If we've got the Israelis fighting terrorists on multiple fronts, I want to help them. It's not involving American boots on the ground. I want to help deter China in Taiwan, et cetera. I'm on board for all of that. I do get the point about funding and pay-fors. It's fair. I also get the point about the border and linking it to the Ukraine aid until all of a sudden that linkage just disappeared. One of the counterpoints, and I just want to ask you about this, one of the counterpoints that you'll hear, and this is more from Democrats, like, oh, well, they're demanding action on the border, but on the Senate side, they came up with a compromise, a bipartisan compromise, and all these guys yelled and screamed and said, there's no way that's acceptable. We're not going to even bring it up for a vote in the House. Now, I was against the Senate bill for various reasons. I think we probably agree on that. But they would say, you want the border linked to Ukraine, but when there was a chance to do bipartisan border action, it was rejected by the House. So won't they basically never take yes for an answer, or they only want a partisan Republican bill, which is a poison pill in divided government? So let's at least do the thing that most of us can agree on when it comes to helping some of these allies abroad. That's the counterpoint that some people make. How do you respond to that?
Point one is that you're never going to win the argument if you're not serious about it, right? So when the speaker was linking the two, you can't go forward and basically tell the entire world, look, guys, yeah, I want border security and I want to cut spending, but don't worry, I will never shut the government down. Hey, I want reforms to FISA, but you know what? I will absolutely reauthorize FISA no matter what. Hey, you know what? I really want border security, but you know what? I'm going to fund Ukraine no matter what. You lose all your leverage. Now, to the point that you're bringing up with respect to the border policies generally, Democrats did that on purpose. They designed that bill to not achieve the result, knowing it would most likely get turned down, so they could blame Republicans while we're getting absolutely hosed with open borders. You had, I think, me on during that debate. You've opined, and I agree, that bill was flawed. It was designed to fail. It was going to codify mass releases of people into the United States. It was going to codify, quote, alternatives to detention. It was going to spend a whole lot of money to continue to process more people, which means you continue to fund the abuse of asylum and abuse of parole to dump people into the United States. When you have Lake and Riley murdered, when you have hundreds of Americans getting harmed, you got thousands dying from fentanyl, 24,000 Chinese nationals that have come across the border since October 1, an unconscionable number. All of that is happening. That bill was designed very specifically to perpetuate it, to codify it. It would have bound the hands of Trump. It wasn't a serious reform proposal. So my problem with the speaker, respectfully, is if you're going to say it, you got to mean it. You got to look him in the eye and say, I like Mike Johnson believed in the Ukraine funding, like you, right? And if the speaker believes in that, you still have got to be able to look him in the eye and say, you know, Chuck, Mr. President, I'm with you. I want some money for Ukraine to stand up against Putin. But I've got to secure the border of the United States. And I'm telling you, as God is my witness, you're not getting a dollar from Republicans until you secure the border. We'll sit down, we'll figure it out. Otherwise, I'll see you in November. He said he was doing that, and then he didn't do it. And I'm telling you, all the people I represent are calling my office saying thank you. I promise you, it's an overwhelming support for my district and a position, despite overwhelming support in my district for Israel. An overwhelming military population in my district.
So another question I have here, just in terms of how this could have gone differently in sort of a counterfactual. Let's say Speaker Johnson had really pressed the issue on the border, saying, OK, we want Ukraine funding. We want Israel funding. We are going to bundle that together with maybe not all of H.R. 2, but let's say a couple big top line wins for Border Hawks and for the Republican conference. I'm sure some people would have been mad. It doesn't go far enough. We want all of H.R. 2. But if he had pared it back but made it something good that would be unequivocal progress on the border issue and jammed that together with Ukraine and Israel, there's a decent chance probably that it doesn't pass because the Democrats whip against it and they want to do what they're going to do on the border crisis, which is they're in favor of it. Their policies are pro-border crisis, pro-illegal immigration, and they want to shield Biden from embarrassment and all of that. So I think the Democrats, maybe in the House, plus some, you know, some Republicans angry for other reasons, might have tanked the bill in the House. Or let's say it passes, basically on party lines, maybe with a few Democratic votes out of the House, and then Chuck Schumer bottles it up in the Senate. Then it's like, okay, now what? if you're not going to have that actually signed into law, if you also believe in the funding for Israel and the funding for Ukraine, and it's just twisting in the wind in the Senate because Chuck Schumer's not going to bring up a vote on that, or they're going to kill it with the Democratic majority in the Senate, you know, then what happens next? You can say, oh, look, the Democrats care about border insanity more than funding our allies. I think that would be a completely fair political attack. You can bludgeon them with it on the campaign trail.
Right.
But in the meantime, the Israelis aren't getting that money. The Ukrainians aren't getting that money. I've heard, and you might disagree, that the intel suggests they really need those resources right now with what's coming with the Russians. So I get what the political value might have been in jamming the Democrats and forcing them to basically say anything on the border is a poison pill. But if you actually believe the rhetoric on the foreign policy stuff and helping our allies, time is of the essence. Do you get that concern the point I'm making?
Yeah, Guy, absolutely I get that concern. And if you're staring at the Ukraine, you're going, well, my gosh, I mean, if they run out of, the ability to fight back against the Russians, and I don't want to get into too much of the details of what's classified or not, but then the Russians can run right through Ukraine, go through Kyiv, and now you've got a real situation on your hands, or on the western flank of Ukraine, you know, threatening Poland and Latvia and Estonia. I get all those arguments. I mean, and I want to stand up for Putin. But let's be very clear. Number one, we've given them $113 billion. $44 billion of that was lethal aid. That means there's another $69 billion. That, what did they do with that? All right, now some of that was our fault, their fault, whatever. My point is, we have not managed that very well. Problem number one. Problem number two, we're not paying for it. Problem number three, they want this money, and I still don't know what the mission is. Problem number four, they're going to be back at the well in December or January wanting more money, and then there's going to be an effort to want to rebuild Ukraine. Put all that aside, the point you're asking. Okay, but nevertheless, we don't want Russia to march through. The reason this mattered was you've got to put this out there, you know, months ago before you're up against the wall, number one. Number two, you've got to mean it, and you got to dare Chuck Schumer and those guys to do it. And what I would have done was put the bill on the floor that would have funded Ukraine with HR2, or as you pointed out, the key components of it. Let's strip back parole and asylum and certain pieces. And send that over to the Senate. And then if Chuck Schumer's really going to jam that up, then he's going to have to own that. I'm just telling you, part of life is negotiating. I don't believe it. I just flat don't believe it. If you would have stuck that to him, I think we would have been an overbearing amount of pressure to fund Israel, fund Ukraine, and secure the border of the United States. And that fight would have been worth it. That would have been a fight that would have galvanized our people. And I think we could have forced them to the table in a way that would ultimately possibly help Ukraine. One final point. It is not clear to me that Ukraine has the bodies to win this war, even if they have the ammo, because this administration has been slow walking it out of fear of escalation, not giving them the stuff to win it because we haven't had a clear mission. And now Ukraine men, they've lost some because they've fled the country, and they've lost 100,000 bodies. You know, they're struggling to have the men to fight the war, regardless of what we give them.
Okay. Understand that point. The scenario that you lay out is certainly plausible. I think you can say that is what the leverage game should have looked like. And I understand that. And I'm willing to entertain it. I still would have voted because I agreed with the actual substance of the bills that passed. I would have voted for them. But I fully comprehend and am sympathetic to the point that you're making. You're also making this point about Speaker Johnson, that he insisted for many months these two things had to be linked. Then all of a sudden, snip, the linkage was gone and the votes came up. I think some people felt like that was, you know, maybe a bait and switch or a little bit of whiplash. President Trump, former President Trump, was asked about this because there's people in the Republican base who are upset with Speaker Johnson about this. Of course, some of your colleagues are talking about trying to vacate that position, the motion to vacate, throw him out of the speakership, like we saw with Kevin McCarthy. Here was Trump yesterday on a radio show in Cut 20 talking about Speaker Johnson.
We have a majority of one, okay? So it's not like he can go and do whatever he wants to do. I think he's a very good person. You know, he stood very strongly with me on the NATO when I said that NATO has to pay up, and they have to pay up soon and fast. And he has stood strongly on that. He agrees with that. He also got some of the money in the form of a loan, quite a bit of the money in the form of a loan. And he, you know, felt on that. But it's a tough situation when you have one. I think he's a very good man. I think he's trying very hard.
All right, so kind of my interpretation of that is cut him some slack. We barely have a majority at all. This is tough. He's trying to manage it. And P.S., I'm adding this part myself, P.S., we're in an election year. I'm going to be on the top of the ticket. Let's not throw ourselves into total chaos with another speaker fight right now. That was my reading between the lines. I could be wrong, but that was my interpretation of what he said. What do you think about, A, his assessment of Speaker Johnson being a good man and all of that, and how does that reflect on what comes next? Should there be a motion to vacate? Should what just happened over the weekend, in your mind, cost Speaker Johnson that position?
Well, number one, of course Speaker Johnson is a good man. I've known him a long time. Number two, I believe that it was still nevertheless a failure, and I believe that the votes over this weekend were, frankly, structured in a way that put a lot of us in a very bad spot, having to vote in a way that we didn't need to have to vote for if the speaker had done it a different way. I think that's a problem. I think number three, of course the president's saying that, all right? He's an election cycle. And you know what? In broad terms, I will tell you without divulging confidences, the overwhelming sentiment among even conservatives angry at him is that we need to focus on beating Democrats in the fall and not have that kind of a debate right now heading into election season. That being said, you know, I was on your show. I did not think we should vacate Kevin McCarthy. I don't think we should have been in this position. I think we were getting a lot done last year, and unfortunately, we went down that road. But what I would tell you is there is overwhelming frustration with the speaker right now because of the way this was all set up and done. You can't just decide.
Okay, and
to
I
do
get
it.
That. And I don't want to cut you off, Congressman, but we're up on a hard break here in just a second. But just quickly, it sounds like, despite those frustrations, which you say are well-founded, and I get it, you don't feel like the solution right now is the motion to vacate. Is that your position?
Currently, but he still has a lot more he's got to lead. And the final point, whoever's going to be our speaker and our leadership team come November, they better damn well mean what they say and do what they say. We're going to have a serious litmus test heading into January about who's leading Republicans because we're tired of this kind of garbage where we cut deals and we turn away from what we said we would do and make people like me have to vote against Israel because there's $9 billion that can go to Hamas in it, which was an unforgivable vote to put on the floor.
Congressman Chip Roy of Texas, our guest on the Guy Benson Show. Congressman, thank you.
Thanks, Guy. Take care.
That was yet another Benson Bite. For full episodes of the Guy Benson Show, go to GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.